welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening.
Ali, welcome to Soccer Coaching Podcast. How are you?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very good too. Thank you very much. We've had a very brief chat. It's mid-World Cup and we're catching a bit of the games and stuff like that. So it's all quite exciting. Are you enjoying the World Cup so far?
Yeah, World Cup fever, isn't it? It's a funny one. Because of all the issues surrounding this particular World Cup, I'd said to sort of friends, oh, I'm just going to watch the England games. I'm only going to watch the England games. Obviously, with me,
I've had
them all on in the background because I've loved this game since, as you know, I could walk. So it's hard to miss out on it, really.
Well, and it's every 4 years, right? And that kind of is, whatever the reasons and the other things going on behind the scenes, it's hard to kind of just forfeit something that you're passionate about. And when it comes on every 4 years, you've got to embrace it and make the most of it. And hopefully, look, we won't get into politics today, but hopefully, you know, the conversation gets generated from all this stuff is a positive thing regardless, and the football's alongside that. So
definitely. Brilliant.
I won't ask you who you think, or maybe I'll ask you at the end who you think is going to win the World Cup. So I'll leave that one with you. We'll do that one at the end. Hey, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the podcast. Number one, we don't get enough women on the show. We try, we don't honestly do, which just seems to be harder to get a hold of girls to come on the show. So thank you so much for agreeing to do it. But also, I've kind of followed things you've been doing, maybe the last 18 months or so, maybe longer than actually, because you've been on other podcasts. I've seen some of the stuff you've been in coaching-wise, and you've got a really interesting journey, and obviously, it's a certain perspective to some, I'm sure. And also, I think you're at quite an interesting point maybe in your journey right now as well, which might be interesting to talk about. Before we kind of get into the conversation about your journey, just a bit about the background and maybe kind of what you've done up to maybe the last 6 months or so.
So, yeah, I am of the generation that was told you're not allowed. You're not allowed to play football because you're a girl. So, unfortunately, I never really had much of a playing career, as it were. I did play a little bit of Sunday League as I was approaching my 30s, which felt at least a decade too late on my knees. But there we are. I gave it a go. And while I was coaching, it was actually then that I got offered a free place on a level one to coach football. And so I thought, you know what, let's go and see what that's about. Up until that point, I genuinely had no intention of becoming a football coach. I'd never considered it. And I went along to the level one. This was a while ago now. It's like 2013, 2014. And I thought this was the old level one for anyone listening. So the FA, thankfully, have revised their coach education quite a lot in the last few years. But I thought it was interesting. I thought it was useful in terms of safeguarding, but it didn't really give me much in terms of football specific coaching. So straight away, I wanted to do the level two because I am a bit of a geek and I love learning, which I think is a really important part of being a coach. Maybe we'll come on to that a bit later. And so I did the level one, level two pretty much immediately. And as part of that, I actually needed to be coaching. So that's when the actual journey began. That was around 2014. And that was, you know, classic 1 hour a week after school club in a playground, completely unpaid, complete volunteer role. And then it kind of just went on a bit of a mad skyrocket journey from that, to be honest. I since then I've coached in academy environments, including Millwall, Tottenham and Chelsea. I've coached abroad at a summer camp in Spain. I've coached in community clubs such as South London Laces and Gold Diggers. And yeah, and then I've done a bit of work for Tottenham Hotspur Foundation. And I would absolutely encourage any coach to coach for a foundation at some point, because it just gives you access to so many different experiences. I coached out in the community and I coached everyone from 6-year-old girls who'd never kicked a football before, all the way through to 66-year-old women who were playing walking football and pretty much everything in between. And it's such a brilliant challenge as a coach because you've just got to adapt and adjust all the time, depending on who you're coaching and what you're trying to, they want to get out of it. So that's a bit of I never know how to answer that question quickly because it's been nearly 9 years. So there's a lot to cover.
You summarised it in 2 minutes. That was perfect. Thanks, Ali. I think the bit about the foundation is so true. I think people think you cut your teeth, or you learn you've got to beat your sharpest point if you're kind of at the elite end of the spectrum of the coaching thing. I think that's wrong. I think if you're coaching in foundation football somewhere where you've got to literally just adapt your session every time you do a session, that's really hard work, isn't it?
100%. It's a different challenge in academies, but they're all there. They're all at the top of their game. They're all willing participants. They want to
Yeah.
be there. They want to be the best. When you coach out in communities, you could have anyone turn up,
Yeah,
So yeah,
exactly.
definitely.
And if you don't mind me asking then, this wasn't a full-time role for you, as you said you were volunteering and stuff. So were you working alongside at the time of the full-time job? And if so, kind of what field was your main work in?
Yeah, so between 2014 and 2019, I was working full time 5 days a week in the civil service. So I did that full time alongside all those coaching roles that I did within that period. And then in 2019, I actually went part time because I was like, this is exhausting. So I was in a fortunate position where I was able financially to go part time, and still have, enough money to live off. That's not true for everyone. So yeah, I went part-time in 2019, and it just allowed me a bit more energy to kind of give to my passion, which is football. And yeah, so I coached a bit more after that point because, like I said, I had a bit more time to explore other opportunities.
The reason I ask the question is because sometimes there's a correlation between the work you do outside of the coaching role and the coaching role itself. Now, obviously, in this case, it may or may not be the case. I won't ask anymore because it's not right to ask anymore around that.
No, it's fine. And I think I can touch on it. I think one of the it because it's actually helped me both ways. There are transferable skills, and one of the it hasn't just it's not that my day job helps with my coaching. It's actually my coaching's probably helped me more with my day job in terms, and also my personal life in terms of listening skills. That is the biggest thing that coaching has given me, the ability to actively listen, not just wait for the noise to stop and so it's my turn to speak, but actually read and understand what another person is trying to communicate to you.
That's such a good point, Ali, because I always think about like the role that someone does in their full-time work, how they might support their coaching. And often if you've got an educational background or something like that, it can be a massive help. You know, I'm not saying it makes you a wonderful coach, but it can certainly help because you understand how education works and child development. But I've never thought about it the other way around. And it's so true, right? You learn so much doing this job, even as a volunteer parent coach, you learn so much. And that can certainly go back into the workplace and your personal life and like as a parent as well and things like that. So it's a great observation. How would you describe your kind of coaching philosophy?
Yeah, so it's a funny one because when I started my UEFA B license, as part of that course, you're encouraged to think about your philosophy. So your sort of your team's playing philosophy, but also more personally, your coaching approach. I've got into not arguments, but heated debates with some academics around calling it a philosophy because strictly it isn't a philosophy. So I've learned from that, and I now call it a coaching approach. But mine is built around kind of three key pillars, I guess, and they are engage, educate, and empower. And for me, that's just about if I'm going to teach someone something, because that's what sports coaching is, right? It's about teaching someone how to do something. And if I'm going to do that, the best way, in my opinion, to do that is to do it in a way that the learner understands. So it might not be the approach that you're most comfortable with as a coach, but actually, it's not about you as a coach, it's about the learner. And so, in order for me to even begin to understand the best approach for the player, i.e. the learner, I need to know them. And so that's why engage is such a massive part of my coaching. I need to get to know you. I need to get to know you on a level that kind of you're comfortable with. And therefore I can start to educate you in ways that are meaningful to you and make sense to you. And then that empowers all of us. That empowers the players on the pitch to go and carry out their role as players, but it also empowers me as a coach and a person to know that I've helped someone and I've made a difference in their journey. And it might just be, some of those sessions I've done, I've only seen that player once in their whole lives, and it's a taster session. And then for whatever reason, I might never see them again. But it's always been really important to me as a coach that I have a positive impact, even if it's only for 1 hour in a person's life. I need to make sure that it's been positive.
we get lots of feedback from coaches listening to the podcast, and a lot of my volunteers, working with grassroots clubs, some of the academy as well. And one of the often things we hear is about frustration and how the players just aren't getting it. Do you think that's maybe because of what you said at the beginning there? Actually, sometimes as coaches, we come of it from like the way that we would learn and want to learn and face a task without thinking, okay, what's actually going to work for our players individually and collectively? Do you think that's part of maybe we get frustrated?
Yeah, absolutely. And as someone who has worked pretty much across that pyramid in terms of I've worked in grassroots and I've worked in academies, I've seen that in all coaches as well. It's not, and I've been guilty of it myself at times as well. And we get frustrated and we're like, why aren't the players getting it? But I think in that moment, that's where you really have to catch yourself as a coach and go, hang on a minute, let me turn this around on me. Because what I'm saying in that moment is, they are not understanding what I am saying to them. So is that about them or is that about me and how I'm delivering that information? And I think, yeah, it's just really important as well to remember that we're all people. The players are people, the coaches are people, everyone has an off day, everyone gets tired, everyone gets hungry, everyone gets hangry. And like we, yeah, and we have to build all of that in. And learning's hard, right? I think we forget this as adults because, I'm quite an academic person and I've got a bit of a thirst for knowledge and understanding. So I'm always trying to learn something new. But in our general day to day, we're never gonna have that intense experience like we did at school, where we spent like most of the day having to learn something and be out of our comfort zone. And then you turn up to a football session in the evening, where you're tired from that learning, even if you're not physically tired, you're mentally tired from that learning you've been doing all day. And now there's this coach shouting new stuff at you, but for whatever reason, you don't get in that moment. So I think patience is just such a massive part of any teaching.
Well, we'll come on to some casuals in a minute, if that's okay. But I just wondered as well, that you saw quite a wide spectrum. Do you have a favorite kind of age group or phase that you like coaching?
Yeah, so I actually prefer coaching preteen and teenagers, which I think must sound mad. Like, I don't actually have any children. And sometimes when I say I love coaching preteen and teenagers, I'm thinking, no, you don't. But I do. I genuinely do. I have coached adults before, and I didn't, it was okay, but I preferred coaching children. And there's something about that kind of preteen moving into teenage that I just think, especially for female players, because I have coached males, but I've predominantly coached females. And I think there is so much going on socially, physically, emotionally, and it's just a joy to give them an outlet for some of that and just be like, let's just have some fun and kick the ball about and let that rage out or whatever it is you're feeling in that moment. Let's channel that in a positive way.
Do you think that's because you can have the empathy there? You just feel like you can relate to that age group and at that stage. Is it that why it's something that you can feel like you can maybe speak their language and understand where they're coming from?
I mean, I guess so. I mean, it's been a while. Like, I'm nearly 40, so it's been a while since I was a teenager. But in terms of, especially from the female perspective, like, yeah, I absolutely remember what that's like. It's like I've been in environments before where, if you're coaching like 12-year-olds, and they'll start to, they might have a session where you think, what's going on there? And I'll just, something will go in my head and I'll go and speak to the mum afterwards and I'll say, has she started her period recently? Like, as in, has she had her first ever period? And they're like, Ali, absolutely. I was going to come and talk to you about it. And I think, yeah, I guess I can have that understanding of something shifted here, something's different.
I think Annie as well, and I haven't seen you coach and I don't know for sure, but I always think when I see a particular coach work well with a particular age group, they don't always know it themselves. But I think the reason it works often, the players respond best to that coach, So like whether or not it's something that you've deliberately looked to suit out of that age group, but maybe they've sought you out in some ways because actually, you know what, they just relate to you and they get you and they know you get them. And I think when you get that connection with a particular age group, then that obviously the coaching is going to be easier, right? Because you're on, you've got something already in the first place. So maybe this is something that, comes from the players the other way around where they know they can, I'm not going to say trust me, it's a bit of a heavy word, but actually know that you get them, which is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think psychological safety, we talk a lot about safeguarding in football, and a lot of the time we mean physical safety, but psychological safety for any age group at any level, like Gareth Southgate will have done a lot of work with the current England team around psychological safety. It's so key to building like that winning formula. And I think, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe those girls at that kind of age range have sensed something in me where actually this woman provides us with a safe space, and they feed off that.
Well, I'm sure that'd be the case, which makes it more fun for you, right, as the coach as well. Well, you've touched on this already a little bit, but I just wondered from your perspective of things, and obviously you'll have seen lots of coaches mentoring and just being out on the circuit and like different environments. What would you say are some of like the essential characteristics for effective coaching? And if it's okay, I'd like to say broadly, and then if you think there are some that are more specific to maybe coaching girls, please highlight those as well. I'm not saying there is, maybe it's all encompassing for everything, but if there was, please highlight those. But some of the characters in the actually, if you've got those as a coach, you can then probably be doing all right.
I think for me, empathy is a massive one. Like I was saying before, we're all human beings, and just to understand that a player, whatever age group they are, whatever background they have, they're not a robot. They don't turn up to a session and go, okay, I'm going to play football now, and nothing in my life means anything. Like they come with the baggage of that day or that week or that lifetime. And they bring it with them. And I think having an ability to just kind of check yourself and be like, hang on, is there more than meets the eye with this moment in this player? So empathy is a massive one for me. Like I said before as well, patience. Because like I'm not gonna lie, I'm not this perfect coach, like far from it. I've had moments where I've absolutely just had to kind of almost turn around and just do some like counting and some breathing, because I'm like, what is happening here?
That's
Like,
every session for me.
yeah, like they aren't, I've tried to explain this, I've used different ways, I've used the tactics board, I've got out the cones, I've done all of this, and I just like everyone has those moments. So patience is massive. But I think that's linked to empathy as well, because I think if you can help to see it from their point of view, it helps you be more patient. I think having a joy for it as well. I always say to people, you've got to love it or leave it alone, because if you are not, you bring that energy. And it's children in particular. So, just to touch on your point around maybe specific qualities for certain age groups, children in particular are very sensitive to energy like that. And they will feed off of the energy that you bring to a session. So, if you turn up and you're in a bad mood, that's not you're not providing psychological safety to those players, and they're going to feed off that, and they're going to be scared to make mistakes. And it doesn't matter what your fancy values are on your CV or up in the wall in the changing room, if you're not actually living those out and you're just shouting at them and you're in a bad mood and you're taking it out on them, they're going to respond negatively to that. So I think that links into that sort of like leading by example. Demonstrate the behaviors that you want your players to have. But yeah, I mean, we could talk all day about that one, right? Because there's so many different qualities and attributes.
You're right, but I think when you get those universal ones like empathy, patience, I mean, really, whether you're coaching under sixes or 60-year-olds, professionals, I mean, it doesn't make a difference. Those are kind of key fundamentals, aren't they, to kind of being effective. If you don't have those, it's not going to be fun for you as the coach, let alone the players, right? Because you're just going to find you're running into walls all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where that kind of joy comes into it. You've really got to have a passion for it, because it
Yeah.
is demanding as well. And I think just to be real, it is very rewarding, but it is a very demanding profession as well. And it takes its toll. It's long hours, because it's not just the coaching, it's all the planning and the trans, the traveling to and from. And the weather in this country during the football season is awful. Like all of that, does take its toll over time. So you really have got to love it.
What does an alley coaching session look like? If we were to come and observe a session and watch you or be one of your players in your session, what would we experience?
Oh gosh, I've had to wear GoPros before, in like when I'm being kind of watched for in situ visits and stuff like that.
You
And
could
I'm like,
completely lie now and just make up and say
yeah,
how
I'm
wonderful
like,
it is.
well,
No
it's
one's going to know.
obviously.
Just say anything you
Yeah, it's obviously fabulous every single time.
want.
I think I guess what I like to imagine is that I'm quite a straightforward. I my sessions are simple. They are not. I don't, everyone overcomplicates this sport, and it kind of does my head in a bit because I think it just gets everyone in a mess. So I don't have a billion cones. I don't, like it's a very simple session design. Because for me, I think it's important as well, and especially to anyone listening who's maybe thinking about taking up coaching or is very early on in their journey. Like I have had to learn how to teach this sport because I wasn't taught it. Remember, I was told, no, you're not allowed to play this. So I wasn't coached until I was about 30 years old. Now, I've had to, over the past, not nearly 9 years, I've had to learn how to teach this sport. But in order to know how to teach it, I've had to kind of learn it in a deeper way myself because I was never coached it. So in some respects, I guess it's selfish the way I make my session simple because it's for me as well. Because I'm like, right, if I need to hit these three key technical points, if this session design is complicated, that's not going to help me either. But I genuinely think it doesn't help the players to overcomplicate it. So yeah, it's simple. It's fun because it's got to be fun, and you'll see that. It was very famous during that 2018 World Cup with the England squad, where they were, they had the inflatables in the pool and they had the rubber chicken that they were throwing around out on the pitch. And that's so important. That's such a key element to any age group, any level, a bit of ability. Because if it's not fun, why would you come back? Like I wouldn't come back if it wasn't fun. So again, bring that fun. And for me, I guess the last one as well is around linked to it being fun is to make it competitive. And competition's an interesting one, especially in women and girls football. Because there's a bit of a myth, especially in recreational kind of community grassroots football, not so much in academies, because obviously they're absolute ballers. They're in academies, like it's instantly competitive. They're playing for their place in that academy every season. But particularly in grassroots, there's a bit of a myth sometimes that women's football and girls' football is just really nice. And it just has to be really, nice, and everyone's saying sorry to each other. And no, that is a myth. And I'll tell everyone that right now. Women and girls like to get stuck in. They love a sliding tackle. They love a 50-50. They want to win. They're there to win. And it's important to provide that element of competition as well, because actually, I think it's disrespectful not to. But also, it's because that's where you get those outcomes, right? Because it's funny, because when I played Sunday League, my favorite position was number 10. I wanted the ball into my feet, and then I would either play, I would pass, or I would shoot. But I didn't want to run. I mean, in fairness to myself, I was like 30 and I was playing against 18 year olds, I just want to say.
Playing to your strengths.
But it was also because in hockey I played center mid. But in football, I like to shoot. So that's why I just wanted to move up the pitch a bit more. But that was my natural sort of play the ball into me and I will be a playmaker or I'll shoot. But my player coach was a number 10. So I ended up out on the left wing. And I was just like, oh gosh, like, I've got to do all this running. And what I realized, probably too late for that particular career, but what I realized was that, I wasn't slow. I just needed to have a reason to get there. And if you motivated me in the right way, do you know what I mean? If you made it fun and you made it competitive, I was quick. But yeah, so that always speaks to me as well, like make it competitive.
I think it's funny about the girls, and I coached under 16s for a little while, girls, and the difference I noticed between the boys and the girls at a similar age was the fact that the competition, no difference, 100%. The desire to win, no difference. The quality in play, no difference. Fantastic. Actually, some of the girls were above some of the boys for sure. Coachability, I think the girls done better than the boys in that one. But it was getting to stay on the ball. It was getting to stay on the ball and not overpass and actually sometimes be a bit greedy. The boys, it was like it was almost the other way around. You have to encourage them to pass a little bit. But for the girls, it was really hard to get them to stay on the ball. And I wonder if part of that was the fact that maybe some of them come in a bit later on. So under 16s might have only started, under 14s. They didn't have that kind of, they didn't all have that foundation where they'd been like stay on the ball because, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't as common anyway to do that kind of stuff. So is that is was I the group I had, was that unique, or is that was that part of the deal? And this is going back a couple of years now, under 16, so they'd be under 19s now.
No, I think I've definitely seen that myself as well. I've also seen I think some of that is around confidence as well, and also just like it's okay to be selfish sometimes. But I think that's to do with the way we're socialized, and that sort of sexism that starts really early on is like, you know, you're going to be nice and polite because you're female, and you're going to be boisterous and get stuck in because you're male. That is changing, thankfully, but I still think, you know, we see that quite a lot, and so I think it is linked to that sort of just allowing themselves that moment to express their ability and not feel like they have to apologize for it, or that means they're a show off, or you know, that kind of stuff. So I've definitely seen that from girls. The other thing I've seen as well is almost them kind of wanting to make it a bit perfect and wanting to play into feet all the time. And it's like, no, just drop it in the gap. Like you don't, it doesn't always have to be this perfect pass, cross goal. But I think that is also linked to, in my experience, and again, this is changing a lot, and it's great that there's now more accessibility to football on TV. But I think a lot of girls that I've coached across the age groups don't watch football. They don't really engage with it as a product. They play, and I'm talking about, I've coached some of the best under 12s in the country, and they love it and they're brilliant at it, but they don't play FIFA. They don't watch it on the TV. They don't go down to the park and watch it. They don't really go to stadiums and watch it. And again, like I said, that is massively changing, and I think it's brilliant. You know, we saw the Women's Euros this summer and the impact that that's had on the sport as a product, as a commodity. And so there's more accessibility of it now. But I grew up watching men's football. So what I did know about the sport is because of men's football. And it's a funny one because people often assume that I'm this like fount of knowledge on women's football. And like, this is a bit of a reveal on your podcast, but I'm really not. And I've never pretended to be either. I think everyone just kind of made the assumption. But I know, you know, I know the names of the male players, and I know, you know, I know those teams because those are the teams I grew up watching, and that's the football I grew up watching. I'm a champion of women's football. I watch women's football as well, but I'm not the expert on it because that I haven't had access to it. It's only very recently that we've been given access to it.
Growing up, when you did, and it wasn't as common for girls to be involved, or you know, it was certainly women's, but wasn't on TV, was it? You'd only been exposed to the men's game, wouldn't you? So it's not surprising that's going to be kind of your point of reference back then. You made a point about not being coached at a younger age, and I wonder if that's, or one reflection now, do you think that's a benefit in some ways? Because a lot of coaches I know, and they're good people and they mean well, but they'll coach how they were coached, or they'll do the complete opposite of how they're coached, from their experience, you know. But actually, maybe having a blank canvas and being the kind of coach you want to be starting now with, kind of, and learning yourself, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I've never thought of that before, but I think you've probably unearthed something there because I think it meant that I had to find my own way with it because I wasn't basing it on anything. I was just like, oh, okay, well, what would make me feel comfortable? How would I want to learn this? And then also, like I said, just being like actively listening and not just listening to the sound of someone speaking, but also their body language. What are they telling me about how they're understanding or not understanding what I'm saying to them? And I think one of the things that I always took from the short period of time that I did play Sunday League was that I was absolutely that player who the coach would explain the session like just by saying it with words and be like, so we're going to do this and you're going to go there and then that ball's going to get played in here and this is going to happen. Okay. Any questions? And I'd be like,
No idea what you said, but I'm not brave
no,
enough to ask a
yeah,
question.
like no. But all, you know what? Not even that. It wasn't even a confidence thing. It was, I don't learn in that way. So I don't know if I've got any questions because I just haven't understood it at all. Like my only question would be like, could you explain it again or could you explain it a
Which
different
probably won't
way?
help anyway. You have to go and do it,
Yeah.
right, and see what
So
happens.
we'd start and I'd sort of watch it and I'd see the pictures and I'd go, oh, okay, you want me there and I need to pass there. And then that's how I'd learn. So I definitely took that into my coaching because, and I would do it as well. I'd stand there with a tactics board and I'd explain the session and I'd immediately be able to pick out the players that were basically me. In the group in front of me, who I'm thinking, you haven't got a clue. And I'd always kind of, I'd say it to the whole group, but I'd look at them and go, but anyway, we're going to go and give it a run through and we're going to do it in slow motion. And then you let me know if you get it or not. Because, you know, you've got all these different learners standing in front of you and you need to give all of them the best chance of understanding it.
You've done your level one back in 2013, so we're getting on to 10 years now of being in the coaching world. I wondered, and you've obviously coached in different environments, I'm wondering what you would consider as maybe what you would think, in your opinion, one of your some of your successes that you've had on that journey so far.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, success, isn't it? We always say define success, but I think for me, because there are, you know, there've been some trophies won, there's been some awards won, and all of that's lovely. But I think for me, and possibly because of how I came into the sport and having been told no, you can't play it and all of that, I think the biggest success for me is around kind of which I absolutely did not set out to be, but just ending up as a role model and being able to be a very visible role model to say, not just to female players, that yes, this sport is for you and you absolutely can play it, but also to other women who want to coach and be like, look, I did, like, seriously, women, if I can do this and go on the journey that I've been on over the last few years. Anyone can, like absolutely anyone can. And so I think, yeah, that's the biggest sense of achievement that I get from it is that it's just that I did it and that I allowed myself, because this passion has always been inside of me. I have, you know, loved this game my whole life. And I basically allowed myself to invest in that passion and go, okay, well, let's put it front and center and see where it takes us.
And it's a great point you make there. And we can lead players. I could see kind of how you can inspire players to be, you know, to become players and want to play the game. I totally get that. But I guess the bigger challenge really here is how do we get more female coaches coaching? Right, that is a much bigger challenge. And even from my experience, the grassroots clubs that I've worked around and stuff like that, the women that do get involved are fantastic. They're brilliant, you know. And it's not that the males aren't and the dads aren't, because they're great. But I think there's just something about the women that get involved where that they I think they prioritize the learning and development more than the football, which I think is a great thing, especially at the younger age groups. And it would be great to get more women doing coaching. How do we do that? Or what have you got some ideas around ways in which we can improve that so we can get more female coaches?
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing is ask them. Like, there's so many environments where it's like, oh, you know, I need some more coaches, but I've asked everyone, I've asked all the dads, and no one's available. And I'm like, right, so you've asked all the dads, like, little hint for you there. So, but I think it's interesting because I have just started a sort of part-time role with the FA. As Women and Girls Community Champion for London, and they've got these community champions all across the country, and that is completely about exactly this. It's about what they call stepping over the sidelines, and it's about encouraging women. Some of them might be there because they're mums of the players. Some of them might be there because they're older sisters, you know, of the players. But encouraging women to do exactly that and go, actually, you know what? I could do this. There's not really anything that scary about this, and I've got all of these skills already, and they seem quite important here. So why don't I go and give it a go? So there definitely are programs and initiatives in place to increase this workforce. I think what will always be a barrier is that women are predominantly the primary caregiver in any family, whether that's they're caring for the children or they're caring for a sick relative or they're caring for an elderly parent. I'm not saying men don't do any of these things, but percentage-wise, these roles often fall to women. And as we know, as coaches, coaching is not like socially friendly in terms of the hours that you have to coach. You know, it's in the evenings, it's on the weekends. And so I think that's why the drive is around, well, if you're going to be standing there anyway, because you've taken your son or your daughter to football, you know, you're already here. You've already given up this travel time. You're standing there. And, you know, the one good thing about coaching is at least you can move around a bit more and you're not as cold. But, you know, why don't you give it a go? But yeah, I think those are the sort of maybe some of the like logistical barriers to it. I will say, and having experienced this in all different types of environments, I get a lot of people ask me, "Oh, we really want a female coach here, but like, you know, we can't seem to attract any." And you know, you may have, I'm not saying your environment isn't set up for women, it may well be, but look at that first, because I've coached in environments that are very male dominated, and as a result, they haven't been that nice to be in as a woman. So I think, you know, it's all very well having good intentions, but have you spoken to your other coaches about it? And have you ensured that they're ready to have someone that, and therefore maybe some of the conversations might need to be a bit different, and their banter in inverted commas, and you know, there's lots of things that put women off those environments. So I think there is work to be done, but it is being done.
It's great to hear. And I think, you know, I would imagine that often there's cases where you've got environments where maybe they're not as friendly or approachable as you might want them to be for female coaches. I don't suppose it's always a conscious thing, is it? It's just people don't really know that they've got that environment, do they? And someone's come and said, well, look, maybe look at this and think about that, because that might open up a whole new opportunity for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just things like if you've been coaching and you're used to just doing it by yourself all the time or whatever, it takes a change in approach. It demands you to sort of adapt as a coach, and because otherwise it's so easy for them, those coaches, to then just talk over whoever's come in and is trying to do it. You know, like you need to, if you want more women in these environments, you need to make them, you know, good environments. And actually that benefits everyone. We're not changing the game so that it suits women and doesn't suit men. We're just making it a nicer place for everyone.
Well, I think it's great that you highlighted the role model aspects of what you're doing. I mean, I've got that from the work you've done and what I've seen you've been over the last couple of years and stuff. And that certainly is the case. And it is lovely winning trophies and getting awards and that kind of thing, which is really, really nice. But if you're going to leave a legacy or make a bigger impact, I mean, that's something to be super proud of. So well done you.
Thank
But
you.
there's no doubt it wouldn't have been plain sailing. And there's no doubt there'd be bumps on the road. And, you know, again, these things aren't always deliberately put in people's places to make it awkward for them, but it happens. I wonder if you'd be happy to share maybe some of the challenges that you faced over that 10-year journey, because it is tough out there, and it's probably particularly tough being a female coach at times. Is there particular moments you think, oh, that was a wobble for me, and would be happy to talk about some of that stuff maybe?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, I touched on some of it there, as you said, in terms of, you know, let's be real. The football is just a microcosm of society. All the ills that we see in wider society, you know, they're no different in football. Unfortunately, they all exist there because people exist in football. So you're going to have the same issues. And so, yeah, I have encountered kind of, you know, sexism and misogyny and some not nice kind of experiences in that respect. I think I had a particularly difficult time when I first started out on my UEFA B license. I actually started my UEFA B in October 2017, and I was only signed off of it January this year. Now, part of that was COVID as well. But actually, a big part of it was I had a really difficult experience on that course in terms of, sexual harassment and a kind of an abuse of power, really. And that I almost stopped coaching completely as a result of that experience, because I just thought, you know what, if this was what it if this is the enduring battle of a woman in football, like, what, I'm not going
Not
to put
worth the
myself
effort.
up for this. But fortunately, and I have to say, the FA and others were very good and did take it very seriously and supported me through it. And they gave me kind of all the time in the world to complete my B license, which is kind of why it ended up taking as long as it did, because I took them up on the offer, basically. I said, I need to step away from that, and I need to, what I really realized that I had to do was I needed to like reignite that passion for coaching again, because I'd had it completely taken out from under me. And actually, I mentioned this earlier about coaching for a foundation. That was a big part of that. Because when you coach in academies or environments where there's a bit more of a sort of a kind of pressure to win, shall we say, and winning looks different at every age group, but that pressure to win is still there, that pressure to succeed is still there. Again, that pressure can have an impact on you. And I think, unfortunately, in that moment, like the two things kind of combined. I wasn't enjoying being in that type of environment. And then I'd had this awful experience on the course. And so I just took a step back from it all. And that's when I started coaching for Spurs Foundation. And that was just lovely, because I started out some of their free taster sessions for girls in the area in North London. And I would be there on a Saturday morning. It was me and another coach. And we would be there on a Saturday morning, come rain or shine, usually rain. And our first session that we did, three girls turned up. Just three. It was a completely free session. Like, you didn't, I'd have given
One-to-one
anything.
coaches,
Yeah,
perfect.
I'd have given anything for that when I was little. And I was like, where are they? And obviously we grew it and grew it and grew it. But it was just like that, all me and my co-coach, who was a man, all we had to do was just make sure these girls enjoyed kicking the ball about. And that, I can't tell you the joy that it brought me. Like, there was just something so lovely about just being like, you know what, I'm not trying to create the next Lioness. I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to hit these targets that are, they just need to have fun with it. It doesn't matter if they fall over the ball, like 9 times out of 10, they just got to come away smiling. And they did. And all of them came away smiling every single time. And I think that really helped me go, no, you know what, actually, you do have a talent for this. And this skill set is needed just as much in academies as it is out here in the community. And then that's what drove me to obviously continue with my B license, and finally complete it. And also to take up the opportunity when it came to coach at Chelsea, which, is it, that I will always be proud of that, because that is an amazing environment to have been a part of.
Well, well enough for completing the B license. It doesn't matter how long it takes to get that's the important thing. And everyone's journey is a bit different, aren't they? Right. And, and those challenges, I guess, it's the old adage, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? And I imagine going through that process is good for you in some ways, but also I imagine good for the sport, because I'm sure your experience and the fact that you were supported in that process will hopefully make it easier for others that might, not easier, but get a more pleasant journey if they go down something similar, right? It won't be the same for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, linked to what I was saying before in terms of trying to inspire and empower other women to take up this role, it, like, I will keep banging the drum on that as well, to ensure that those processes and those courses are safe and friendly, like sort of female friendly. And that shouldn't, and I'm very passionate about this as well, that shouldn't have to mean that they are female only courses. Because actually, me personally, like, I grew up playing football with boys. And I'm more than happy to look, because I think the more diverse, in anything we do, the more diverse the group, the better the outcomes for everyone. So I understand that there are lots of women that prefer to go on female-only courses, and I think they should be on offer for lots of reasons. But me personally, I want to learn with everyone. It doesn't have to be a female-only group, but I need to be safe in that group, right? So yeah, so now I think I'm moving towards, okay, how can we make this a better place for female coaches?
It would be such a shame if it was compulsory to be segregated, because there's so much learning across there. You get so much benefits by having a whole different mix of people out on these courses and sharing their ideas and thoughts. So yeah, we'll come on to the role that you're doing in a minute. That's okay. But another thing that I think resonates from, and I've heard you speak, and even on the podcast today, is isn't just about coaching the player, but also coaching the person. How important is it to you when you're coaching or supporting the players that you've got, that you're looking at that life skill stuff as well, and not just becoming the next Lioness or, the next professional football player?
Yeah, definitely. I think because, if we think as well, percentage wise, this is often talked about in the male game, but it's true in the female game as well. Like the actual chances of you even just remaining injury free, like let's just start there. Like that's hard in itself. But the chances of you actually making it all the way to elite, professional sports person are so slim. Like, proper first team WSL players, they are slim chances. So for me, what I've always said is that my function as a coach, is to teach players how to play this game. But my purpose as a coach is to inspire a lifelong love for the game and leave a legacy of care. Because it may well be that actually that one season is the only season you ever have, or that one session is the only session you have, and then it inspires you to go on and play tennis instead. Or, so it's so important to understand that the person and what it is that they want to get out of this experience. Because also even at the very elite level, I've coached players who could play for their country in years to come. They are good enough, but they want to be a doctor. Do you know what? Fair enough. Like, why should you, just because you're brilliant at something doesn't mean that other people's expectations and desires for you should be what you end up doing. I think that's amazing that one day we might have a doctor in this country who also is absolutely amazing at football. Like,
And that's right. It's how it should be, right? It should complement the other things going on in life, not be like the only thing you have to do, right? You haven't got to specialize in these things. It's part of the whole package of you as a person. And like you said at the beginning, I think some of these things transfer across, don't they? If you're good at learning and you're good at applying yourself and you can show resilience and ownership and responsibility, well, those are the kind of things you might want a doctor as well as a football player, okay?
And I think it helps you as a coach as well to understand players' motivations and desires for being there, because you then sort of get a bit of an insight into their world, and you're like, okay, well, because equally in recreational football, I've coached a women's team before who some of them were very, like some of the players I coached in the same session were ex-semi-professionals, and some of them had never kicked a ball before in the same, and you get that a lot in community rec football because it is just one session for all. And I knew then, because I knew that about them and I'd had conversations with them as they arrived and as they left and whatever, I know the players that I can go up to and nudge them and be like, where's your left foot gone? Because you're only using your right. Because I know that's too easy for her. But equally, I know the players that I can go up to or just very publicly praise and clap and applaud when they've done anything with the ball because they've never done it before.
Brilliant. Well, look, we always get asked on the podcast to encourage guests to share some of their maybe their coaching, it's not actually secrets, but certainly some of their sessions or their favorite games or things to play. If I said to you now, right, you've got to go and do an under 14s girl session tonight, last minute, you've got 15, 20 girls turning up. Don't care what you teach them, doesn't matter what the topic is, you can pick it. What would be some of your kind of go-to maybe practices or games that you would do, or how would you approach that and to try and make it work? And anything you can give us as a little tip would be brilliant.
Well, I mean, I'm a planner for for sure.
So you'd
And
hate that, wouldn't
again,
you, straight away?
that's linked to my journey of learning how to coach this game. I actually had an interview a little while ago where I didn't know what I was going to have to put on until I got there, and then I had 15 minutes to plan it, and it said you're going to have between five and seven players. I was like, what? And then I ended up with seven players, but I had as many members of staff watching me as I had players to coach. And that was just, I mean, It was all right. I didn't get the job. The feedback was that actually my engagement with the players was brilliant, but it was the other things that maybe weren't so great. But that,
I
but
would hate
I
that,
wasn't
Ali.
even,
Honestly, I would
but
hate
you
that
know
too.
what,
That
Scott? I wasn't even upset by it because I was like, yeah, because
fair
I'm a
enough.
planner.
Yeah,
So if
that's
you
me.
need someone that is going to be able to do all of that, I'm not the right candidate because
True.
that's not me.
Yeah, that's a good interview, right? For everyone's sake, that's a good interview. So what we're going about it.
Let's play to our strengths. But what
Well, I'll
I
say what, let's give you 3 weeks to plan this session out now. You can call us
No, but
back in
what
3 weeks. We'll add it onto the
yeah,
podcast.
when I've got time. No, but what I love to coach in terms of at least topics, I'll get at least that far, is I actually love coaching transitions
All right.
because I love the energy, I love the pace of it. And also, if you think about it, that's what football is. Like, we talk about in possession, out of possession, and then transitions as though they're all separate. And I'm like, well, the game's constantly in transition, pretty much.
Especially in the foundation phase, right? I mean, it's anything under 12s and below is it's just permanent transition, right? I mean, you may get a bit more fine-tuned as you get a bit old, but even then, it's so true.
So whether it's transition to attack or transition to defend, like I just love coaching. And again, even with that, it's like even if you're coaching transition to attack, there will be moments when you then have to transition to defend. So I love coaching transitions. I'm not saying I find it amazingly easy, but I that kind of makes me think, oh yeah, like let's plan a good session for this. And then I think linked to what I was saying earlier, I try and make it fun, I try and make it competitive, but above all, I try and make it simple because otherwise you spend all night trying to explain the session and that's
Yeah,
not great for anyone, is it?
no, 10-minute interventions and stuff, and yeah, it doesn't
Yeah.
work, does it? Okay, all right, we'll let you off that one. That was good. Well done on the spur of the moment. You got the job. Well done.
Pass that interview.
Well, talking about jobs then, I don't know how happy you are to share. You've mentioned it, I think, already that you've recently started or going to start a new role. Are you happy to talk a bit about that?
Definitely. So I have it, across the summer really, I sort of made the decision for a number of different reasons to take a kind of step back from coaching. So it's probably for the best that I didn't get that job because that job was actually a coaching job. But yeah, to just take a step away from it and kind of take stock and have a bit of a breather and be like, I've done a lot as we've discussed in those years. But also just try and assess where my skill set now is best suited. And I genuinely feel it is in developing others off the pitch, and in terms of specifically other coaches and female coaches, because I do think, the game is changing in that respect. And actually, lots of people and men are recognizing that there are lots of skills and qualities that women in particular can bring to this sport. And that the more diverse our workforce is, the better it is for everyone. And so, yeah, we literally had our induction last week at St. George's Park. And so, yeah, I've just taken up one of the many, they have this role like across the country, but they call them community champions. And for me, it's specifically looking at the women and girls game and encouraging women in particular to step over the sidelines and become coaches themselves, or at least give it a go and see how they feel about it and where it might lead for them. So we've only just started. I haven't even managed to go out to any clubs yet. It is box fresh right
Right.
now, but I'm really excited about it because I do think that, with my passion for the game and my experience of the sport as a woman and as a coach in lots of different environments, I think I can bring a lot to this role and help inspire, I guess, other women to kind of sort of pick. I feel like I'm handing the baton over, basically. I'm going, okay, like I've run it for the last 9 years. Like
Somebody else's turn. Yeah.
give it a go. And I've had so, we've talked about some of the difficulties I've faced, but actually the rewards far outweigh those moments. And I know lots of really good men in the sport as well, because I don't want any of your listeners listening to this thing, oh my gosh, this has just been like a men bashing episode. I know some brilliant male allies in the game, and yeah, I just really want to encourage other women to give it a go. That's all I'm asking. I'm not, you don't have to sign up to anything. Just give it a go and see how you feel.
And we'd be working with grassroots clubs, professional
Yeah.
academies. Yeah, and is it
So it's
across
a
the region or
grassroots.
is it the whole country? I mean,
Yeah, so my role, I'm because London's so big, there's actually two of us doing it in London, but our role is about going out to grassroots community type of providers, clubs to encourage essentially mums to step over the sideline, and but also to help those clubs with their environment as well. And like I was alluding to earlier, is your environment geared up? Is it ready to have a female coach or female coaches? And so there are similar initiatives, obviously, that take place in elite football and things like that. But my role in particular is very much about grassroots. That, they're called community champions because they're trying to get in amongst the communities, to develop female coaching workforce.
Congratulations, you're going to be perfect for it. I know you are. I had the privilege of having a female coach support me when I had my under 6 to under 9s group, and she was fantastic. She then went to take a women's team. She did that. Like you said, during the podcast, I think what happened with her, it got harder to do the hours outside of that, but she was brilliant. She was great with the kids. And I would have loved to have someone like you alongside us in supporting us as a club to help us get that off the ground even further and push it more. So great initiative. Fair play to the FA. I think sometimes they get a lot of bad press about certain things, but this is a great initiative and something that's really, really needed, I'm sure. And you're the perfect person for it. So I'm looking forward to hearing about how well it's going. Maybe in 6 months or a year's time, you can update us. But the growth of the game more broadly, because, well, there's two questions. One, I guess this is going to be, that is the growth of the girls and women's game helping with that? I guess it must be, but how much that impacts on their role. Also, are you looking for female coaches to coach female groups, or is it actually, do you know what, just female coaches in the system's great, whether they're coaching men, women, boys, girls, doesn't actually matter.
Yeah, so for me, it's really important that we normalize women as coaches in football. Now, whether that's coaching boys or men or girls or women, to me, it doesn't matter because actually, I've often been frustrated by that assumption that if you're a woman, you obviously coach women. And actually, for the majority of my career, that happens to have been true. But I have coached males as well. And I know women who coach their son's team, or and so I think it's really important, like I said, that we just normalize women in football in general because we are here, we're good at it. And like I said, the more diversity we have, the better it is for everyone. So my ambition is just to increase that female workforce across the sport, regardless of who is kicking the ball about on the pitch.
And the growth of the game is helping, I guess, with that. Because I mean, it's gone on massively. We've gone from one team in our club maybe 8 years ago now. I think we've got about 15 girls' teams, maybe more now. So it's really grown in a very short space of time, right?
Yeah, my heart was warmed the other week because my secondary school, which didn't have football when I was there, so I played hockey at school, and they've got girls' teams now in their different year groups, and they won a little competition the other day for my secondary school, and I was just like, oh yeah, and like because it's funny because some of my friends who I went to school with are like, oh, doesn't that just make you feel a bit bitter that like you didn't have any of that? And like obviously there is a part of me that's like, oh, it's just like 30 years too soon,
Better late than never.
but better late than never. And also like that sort of mentality doesn't
Doesn't
make
progress things.
progress. We don't, none of us make any progress with that. And also that mentality, like you hold that toxicity, like it just makes you sad. It doesn't actually affect anyone else. So, I've dedicated a lot of my time over the last few years to progressing the sport for females, be that on the pitch or off the pitch. And I'm just so joyful when I see all these opportunities. It's a bit like the Lionesses that won in the summer. They were very quick to say, and let's recognise the women who weren't recognised, the first ever England women's team. They didn't get official caps, and now they've got them all, and that's brilliant because none of us would be here without the women who came before. So yeah, the growth of the game is massive, and yes, it's overdue, and we could talk about, why it took so long and why was it banned in the first place and stuff. But you can't change the past. We can only move forward. And what we have to do now is just not be grateful for the seat at the table, but be like, well, actually, we're here to chair the meeting now. So this is
Yeah.
our agenda.
A
Like, let's move.
100%. Oh, but actually, on that point as well, I think if people don't understand about the history to the women's game in this country, it is a fascinating history, isn't it? Going back to like pre-war, really, and stuff. So you think actually, there's been a turbulent journey, but you can't dwell on the past, and it is about where we move forward. And if we look at how things have changed in the last 5 to 10 years, it's phenomenal, and that's credit to everyone that's been involved and is involved. And I know you're going to play your part in that moving forward, and you already are. So, well done, you. Thank you so much, Ella. It's been fantastic. There's one more question if you try to answer that's okay. We ask all our guests this question. If there was one thing you could change about the world of coaching or football, what would that be?
Oh gosh, you know what? If I'm being brutally honest, it would be the pay or the pay structure. Because to me, it has always been a nonsense that the coach is tasked with inspiring this lifelong love for the game in 6-year-olds are paid, sometimes not paid at all, or are paid the least out of everyone. And that doesn't make any sense to me, because if you don't inspire those kids and coach them properly, you don't have a first team of the future. So if I could change one thing about football for everyone, not just for females or female coaches, but for everyone, it would be that the pay structure in coaching.
No, it's a good one. Look, and I think it's not about being greedy or wanting to become a millionaire for doing something you love doing as a hobby, but actually, there's lots of great coaches that can't afford to be coaches, isn't there? And you invest a lot of time, effort, and you're learning. It's a craft, right? It's not the kind of thing you just read a book and go off and do, not if
Yeah.
you're going to do it well.
It's a skilled
It's
profession.
a 100%.
You wouldn't have a doctor who just didn't really know what they were doing, but you, oh yeah, I'll just pay you loads of money. But it is as skilled at under six as it is in the England men's team. It's
Yeah.
the, you know, it's you are a skilled professional and you should be paid accordingly.
I like it. We'll take that one. Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate your time. Look, if listeners want to find out more about you, the role you're currently doing, and reach out to you, is that possible? And if so, what is the best way of going about it?
Yeah, so I'm active on socials, which is how you found me. So yeah, so on Twitter, I actually have to always write these down because I've got so many underscores in my in my because you know, for some strange reason, there's other people called Coach Ali. I mean, I don't know what they're playing at, to be honest. I'm the
We used to get a
original.
blue tick. You can get
Ooh,
those now, can't you?
oh yeah, but
No,
you can't be that person that's paid for one now, can
they're
you? But
not
yeah,
cool anymore, are they?
So, for anyone who's interested, on Twitter, it's at underscore Coach Ali, ALI underscore. And then on Instagram, there's even more underscores, so brace yourself. It's at underscore Coach underscore Ali underscore. And then
Brilliant.
I'm also on LinkedIn for the more professional amongst us. And I'm
None
Ali
of our listeners are
Skeesley.
very professional. They won't worry
Yeah.
about that one. So, go. What was LinkedIn one?
LinkedIn's at just if you look up, search Ali Speechley, Speechly.
Thanks, Ali. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. We encourage you to read out. Not everyone can see the show notes. So, by having it in both places, they've heard it audibly and they can see it in the show notes as well. So, the links. Thank you so much. Like, I don't know, but if it is okay, maybe in 6 months or 12 months' time, if you would come back on, and maybe if you're allowed to, I hope you'd be okay to kind of share an update on how things are going, how many community clubs are jumping on this, how many women we've got more coaches now in the game. Would you be happy to do that?
Yeah, definitely. And thanks so much for inviting me on. I've genuinely enjoyed the conversation. So thank you.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Ali.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.